you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Today on Quick Slants the Podcast, the Senator Phil Perry goes 15 rounds with Arkansas Razorbacks head coach Brett Bielema. Why the Senator want to do that? Because Bielema keeps sending players to the New England Patriots, his program, his guys. Phil tackles it with Brett. Plus a bunch of other stuff too, but this is really the highlight. All that and more on
Quick Slants the Podcast,
presented by Papa Gino's.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, Tommy Curran. Over there is Adam Hart, and of course, the Senator Phil Perry, who carried this podcast for us. Hey, guys.
Welcome back, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you aboard again.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
People missed you.
Yeah, I missed them. And I salute you guys for soldiering on without the nose. How'd it go? Fine?
I thought so.
Yeah,
thought
it went okay.
Good. It was good. We got Judy on the horn.
Sure.
That's nice.
Love her on the blower. Yeah. She's real good on the horn. Listen to me. I want to make this a, without further ado, comment where we get right to the interview. But Phil, first, why Brett Bielema?
Because the Patriots, Tom, have four guys now from the University of Arkansas on the roster that played for Brett Bielema as members of the Razorbacks. Trey Flowers, everybody knows him. Dietrich Wise, fourth round pick this year, everybody knows him. Brooks Ellis, linebacker, undrafted rookie. This year, nobody knows him. And Cody Hollister, one of the two Hollister twins that has signed on with the Patriots this offseason as an undrafted rookie.
Fashion guy.
Plus a little James White. James White.
Diamond Jimmy White.
Was part of Bielema's program at Wisconsin. So he said, you know what? The last time the Patriots really went on a run on college players like this from one program was Rutgers. It feels like we're still talking about that.
Is there something to plumb and to mine there in this interview that we'll hear?
There might just be. There's actually a couple connections.
Hmm.
So Bielema, who was great, joined us in the middle of a freaking tornado warning in Arkansas somewhere, middle recruiting season, joined us for about 20 minutes or more and spoke about all the connections that run between Arkansas and New England. And the main one for him is that he coached at Iowa back in the day under Kirk Ferentz, who was an assistant of Bill Belichick's at Cleveland. And so Ferentz brought Belichick's program to Iowa. Bielema learned under Ferentz, and there you go.
Bill Belichick says nothing's more important when getting a recommendation on a player from someone he has on a player that he hasn't seen is that the person he's speaking to knows what the baselines and thresholds that Belichick is looking for. So when a guy says, yes, he enjoys football. Football is important to him. They're working from the same baseline. Well, without further ado, ADO, we're going to throw it to Brett Bielema after a little bit of ado. Papa Gino's.
That's right, because with dough made fresh daily and Walpole mass from just 5 simple ingredients, nothing else tastes like Papa Gino's. It's the official pizza of the New England Patriots and Quick Slants the Podcast and Quick Slants the Television Show.
Brett?
All right, we have Coach Brett Bielema here from Arkansas. Felt like we had to get Brett on the podcast because he's just got so many guys that have ended up with the Patriots here between James White, who he had at Wisconsin, and Trey Flowers, and Dietrich Wise, obviously, who was taken in the fourth round. Patriots picked up a couple undrafted free agents from Arkansas. They've obviously had A.J. Derby in the program. All of these guys have worked with Coach Bielema, and so it is a pleasure to have Coach Bielema on with us on Quick Slants, the podcast, right now. Coach, how you doing?
Thank you, Phil. It's great to be on, and
we are very excited. I have the utmost respect for Coach Belichick and everything he's done, and to have our guys be a part of one of the best programs in the history of the NFL is pretty special.
What is it, Brett, about your program that allows or attracts the Patriots to your guys? Is there something about the way you're teaching these guys or what you're teaching these guys that you think makes them attractive to Bill Belichick and the Patriots?
You know, it's been a long history. So one of my first coaching jobs, I was a linebacker coach at the University of Iowa for Kirk Ferentz. And Kirk and Coach Belichick, I think, are fairly close, worked together and
sure.
Share a lot of similar thoughts and ideas. And that's when I first became kind of aware of Coach and what he believed in. I never remember. I believe it was James Ferentz, one of Coach's sons, that was a little guy at the time. And Coach was playing in his first Super Bowl, I believe. And someone asked, well, who was going to get introduced first in the Super Bowl, offense, defense? And a little man, less than 10 years old at the time, said, if I know Coach, they're going to all come out together. And that's exactly what happened. And I was just blown away at that statement. And it kind of made me look into the inside of what Coach is all about. You know, the team is all that matters. It's not offense, defense, special teams. It's not the individuals. It's a team. And it's something I really believe in. And I know now that I visited that organization there a couple of years back and have developed a good relationship with Coach. And I think he just sees a lot of what we believe in that comes from the same thought that he obviously built one of the greatest franchises in really all sports. So it's fun to see that same thing come out time and time again.
That's an amazing story that you tell about James Ferentz, because believe it or not, he just signed with the Patriots earlier this week. He did. Offensive lineman came into the league as an undrafted guy with the Texans, spent a couple years with the Broncos, and the Patriots just picked him up. So there's that Ferentz to Belichick connection again. And it's funny you mentioned, you know, how young he was when the Patriots won their first Super Bowl and came out as a team, like you said, before playing the Rams. But Belichick obviously goes a long way back with Kirk Ferentz, who's now the head coach at Iowa and has been since 1999, I believe. And, you know, so James would have been a really little guy back in the early 90s when Kirk joined Bill in Cleveland.
What was that first Super Bowl? What year was that?
That was the 01 Super Bowl. So it would have been, you know, the game itself happened in the fall of 02, or the winter of 02. But yeah, James Ferentz, and now he's here in New England. That's a really funny story. And it makes sense. It makes sense that, you know, those guys, Belichick and Ferentz, would have had sort of the same ideas in terms of how to approach things as a head coach. And it sounds like that has, you know, stuck with you as well. And it seems like, Brett, you know, a lot of times when we hear about your programs, whether it was at Wisconsin or now at Arkansas, you know, offensively especially, you know, even for me and for a lot of us in New England, who, you know, it's not necessarily a college football town, but even I know, you know, when I hear your name, I associate that with a pro-style offense. So do you feel like that has, you know, maybe a little something to do with it as well, is that, you know, what the system you guys run just allows your players to make the leap to the pro level a little bit easier because of the way that you're, whether it's just, even just the way you're calling plays?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was actually talking to a coach at another NFL team, a complete other side of the country, and they were talking about one of our wide receivers was in the huddle and basically telling all the other players where to go and what to do with that position. They didn't have any recall of that type of offense, and I do think it allows a transition. You know, A.J. Derby, he played literally, I believe, 8 or 9 games for us at tight end. He was a quarterback all the way till his senior year. And first, obviously the projection that the Patriots had to take him, and then obviously the results they had with him once he was there, there was a lot of carryover, not necessarily in the same terminology, but there's an easy, oh, that's this, I mean this, okay, I got it, you know. And now to have a couple defensive linemen, that's the other thing. I got to tell you, as long as I've been doing this, on draft day, I've really only heard from 2 or 3 organizations during my entire 12-year career that reach out to me during the draft. And to be quite honest, it's New England, Seattle, and this year, in the last couple of years, with the Falcons. And I believe it's obviously because of the legacy that's at Atlanta through New England, you know. So it's just, it's not a surprise to me when these things happen. It's very, very clear why it happens and why they have success. And my hat's off to everybody in the organization.
So that's interesting. What when you know the Patriots or one of these other teams will call you on draft day? What is it? Are they just looking to get some you know some final questions answered about some of these guys that the, you know that they're obviously looking at from your team?
Absolutely. It's you know a lot of just follow up detail on understanding of who they you know a lot of them may have down to I have no idea how draft day works. You know I've been around the NFL organization as an observer, but I've never been in the draft room, and I'm sure it's just. Hey, who's going to make the final call here? What's the decision? Why do they make that call? And a trust in a good relationship. The one thing that I really do pride our guys on is I make our guys hold accountability to doing things right, you know, and having a certain work ethic and an attitude so that when they get there, they don't have to learn how to do that. You know, it's just, it's actually already there. Now they're going to enhance it. I understand the Patriots take it to a whole nother level, but it's, I think that ground level understanding of what you're getting is already there. Now they can build it and mold it into what they want.
So were you surprised when they went and took Dietrich in the fourth round? It sounds like probably not.
No, I was, I thought Dietrich would really, and because as you know, if you've interviewed him, his personality is so magnetic and energetic. He's physically as good as you want. You know, I say this, he's a cross guy. And when you see him, you know that you got a football player there, and he obviously the Patriots had a lot of teams. I thought he was going to go in that fourth or fifth for sure.
Did you think that maybe he was the kind of guy, Brett, who could have gone maybe even a little bit earlier? Just for me looking at it, it looks like physically, just because of the length and the athleticism,
yeah.
He tested pretty well at the combine too. You know, he looks like, you know, and I know the Patriots don't love it when we reporters compare, you know, guys of different eras or guys from team to team. But when I looked at him and height, weight, and again, the arm length and everything else, I said, man, this guy looks a lot like Chandler Jones when Chandler Jones was coming out of Syracuse a few years ago. And so I thought that he might have a chance to even go a little bit earlier, but I know he was a little bit banged up maybe last year, and he even admitted that to us. That he didn't have quite maybe the beginning part of the year that he was hoping to have. And so maybe the Patriots, you know, I don't know, maybe they feel like they got a steal getting him as late as they did.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know who Chandler Jones is. But yeah, I think as a coach, you probably always a little have reservation when a kid's senior year isn't maybe everything that they thought it was going to be. And I think Dietrich was quite a bit of a combination of he was having an unbelievable spring. He had a fall camp that was second to none, had a first game, and it was really on the last play of the opening game of the year. He gets a sack. He meets at the quarterback with another defensive line of ours that went to the Detroit Lions. And those two met for a sandwich, and unfortunately, Dietrich hurt his hand, and that really, you know, a D lineman with a banged up hand isn't going to be able to go full go, and he, God bless him. He worked his tail off and gave us everything he could, but really didn't get healthy till the last, you know, maybe two, three, four games. And then I know that I was told at least at his combine and in that situation performed very well. But there's probably always that hesitation. But that's what I say. Coach Belichick's the best in the business because he understands what he sees and believes, and in the end it ends up usually happening.
One thing we actually had a chance to speak to Wise this week, and one thing that he said that kind of caught my year was that, you know, at Arkansas there was an emphasis for us to know not only our position but to be able to understand what the big picture of the defense was and to understand what the guys next to us are doing. And that's something that you hear a lot here in New England because that's something that yeah. Coach Belichick, you know, is touting all the time to these guys. How much of an emphasis, Brett, are you putting on that larger understanding and that sort of philosophical understanding of the defense to those defensive guys that you've sent to the league?
Yeah, one of our big, we have the five edges to Arkansas that we talk about all the time, and one of them is just football IQ, being able to understand the game. And what we do, we teach Hoganese here. We teach a culture and a language that's unique to us here as Hogs, as Arkansas Razorback. So these Hoganese classes constantly year-round, spring, summer, and fall, our classes that teach not only the individual and the individual groups, but I'm going to teach a defensive end, you know, when he's spilling underneath a kickout block and the corner is there to support why that happens and what it does. But also when that happens, what what player now is exposed, you know, because there's going to be times when a player gets to make a fun play. He's a blitzer, he's a stun or something, but it's the one when he's got a really tough job to hold the defense that he's got to come through at his finest. And I think our kids have a better understanding of how that happens, and that in the end makes everybody play a little bit better.
Do you think with Wise in particular, he's somebody that could, you know, he's listed as defensive end. I know that, you know, that's where he was for the majority of the time for you guys. But do you feel like he's somebody who could play inside? You know, obviously we've seen Trey Flowers do that quite a bit, you know, this past year especially. Is that something that you could see Wise doing as well, is playing a little bit inside?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I learned early on, and I know it's been a benefit my entire career, even when I coached J.J. Watt, what when you have a guy with great length, he looks good on the edge, but when you put him inside, a lot of times the guards in general or the interior offensive linemen usually have shorter length, shorter arms, shorter torsos, everything. So now if you can get a guy with great length in special situations to rush in between the tackle gaps, you got something special. And Dietrich really excelled at that, similar to what we did with Trey, similar to what I've done with J.J. Watt. It's something that I think a lot of people can learn to expose it in the right situation.
One thing, you know, Trey, it felt like, made such a quantum leap from his first year to his second. And I say it looked that way because we didn't have a chance to really see him a whole lot as a rookie. He actually had a pretty impressive training camp in preseason before getting hurt. And then this past year, just really, I would say, from the bye week on, right about halfway through the year, became one of the best, you know, most productive interior pass rushers in the league, really, when you look at it league-wide. What do you feel like, Brett, his ceiling could be? Because it feels like he just got better and better every week this past year.
Well, when Trey was coming out, one of the benefits that I told every NFL team that's coming through, and whether they wanted to listen or not, you know, we had only had him for 2 years. I got here after the conclusion of his second year, and he played immediately. He never redshirted, so... And there wasn't a huge amount of emphasis to get a before and after photo of Trey when we first got here, and then we'd do a photo going into the fall of every season. And his before and after photos while we had him in the program was scary. I mean, it was just beginning to show what he could be. And then, I don't know if you've met his father yet, you know, Robert Flowers is a pretty large man who's genetically, you can tell, very gifted. And I just kept saying with Trey, much similar to James White, you know, when I had James White, James never redshirted. Came in, had a productive career, but never had that growth. So he's now becoming an NFL player a year earlier than a lot of other guys are, and that development factor is such a huge window. It's not surprising to see Trey really, I thought he would get a lot better in a short amount of time in the right environment, and obviously that's what you saw. And I thought I was sitting there in the Super Bowl smiling every time New England was either on the field offensively or defensively. I had two guys who were such a huge part of that game, and you knew that they're probably playing as good a football as they've ever played simply because they've been coached, developed, they listen, they have great IQ, and they want to be successful. And it's fun to watch that thing happen.
And it's funny, you know, you mentioned just how valuable some of that time to develop can be, and it's something that the Patriots really had with both of those guys, with Trey and James. You know, they're competing every year, and, you know, both those guys as rookies, you know, Belichick, I asked Belichick about James White after the Super Bowl, and he kind of laughed because he said, you know, last time we were here, James wasn't even active. And now he's, you know, right. He's borderline, you know, MVP, maybe should have been the MVP of that game. It, you know, with him in particular, Brett, with James, I mean, was he this kind of player for you in that he seems to be like the ultimate passing game weapon for them and sort of fits perfectly into that Kevin Falk mold, you know, that they had for years, or Shane Vereen, or whoever you want to call it, but is just so good, you know, not only catching the football, but understanding where he needs to be and asked to line up in a whole bunch of different places, can pass protect. Is this kind of what you envisioned when you saw James as a pro, or did you think, you know, he could be that guy, you know, that between the tackles, that guy too, if he needed to be?
Well, you know, the first thing about James White, you know, comes from a great program in Fort Lauderdale, St. Thomas Aquinas. Right. And when I went to watch him, he was actually not the starting tailback into his senior year. He was a second string guy. The guy in front of him was a five-star, all this, all that. I had all the measurables, ended up going to Notre Dame or something. I can't remember. And we get James, and he comes in. He's a Big Ten freshman of the year. You know, and he actually beat out Monty Ball, who ended up being a really good player, was up for the Heisman. So James, you know, he doesn't say boo, you know. I mean, if you hear him, he don't say anything. He's just unassuming. So intelligent. I saw him that first year. He's so fluid with his feet, but he has great hands. But we used him as a wide receiver and used him on some things that fussed out in an empty set that got you excited. And I'm sure the Patriots thought early on during the evaluation, and that's why I'm assuming they drafted him. But, you know, the great thing about James, too, in today's world, James, Trey, Dietrich, you got Cody Hollister, Brooks Ellis, now his free agents, a couple other guys. Those guys are never going to – you're never going to have to wake up and worry about what they did last night. You know, they're great people. They're great kids. They buy into being successful. A lot of them come from two-parent homes or homes that you can realize that they've been raised the right way, and I think that's another great thing that the Patriots look for, and it's not it doesn't happen by chance why they win all these games.
Got to ask you because, you know, people that listen to our podcast are real Patriots chronics. You know, they're looking for every morsel of information. So, you know, even these undrafted guys, you just mentioned Brooks Ellis and Cody Hollister, you know, those guys are guys that, you know, fans here are digging into and trying to find out, you know, what they can about these guys. And Brooks is actually an interesting guy to me because when I was kind of looking at some of these players that the Patriots might be interested in the draft, you know, I thought they might be interested in a linebacker just looking at the depth chart, and he kind of fits the, you know, the size mold and really productive in the SEC, you know, good program and really smart guy. And I thought for sure he was a Patriots fit. And so it was funny to see him end up signing with the Patriots. But what kind of guy are the Patriots getting, Coach, in Brooks Ellis there?
Well, first and foremost, he came in, started about halfway through his true freshman year. We weren't a real good football team. We were 3-9. Threw him in the middle of it. He didn't bat an eye. Got better every game. Sophomore year really began to mature, develop. And you know, he's another guy that's a potential because we never registered him to grow in this year is going to be huge. Played all three linebacker positions, Sam, Mike, and Will for us. Started in every phase of the kicking game. Graduated with a 3.5 or better GPA. He was one of 12 academic finalists for the basically the academic Heisman in all of college football. Not just the SEC, not just Power 5, in all of college football. And a lot of people voted on the committee told me he should have won it. It was just one of those political games. But, you know, whenever he gets done playing, he's going to be all right. He's going to be a doctor. So we got everything going in that regard. But he's just truly a very, very intelligent, compassionate. And the value that he brings is I think he could be an unbelievable role player. I'm not saying he's going to, you know, be a four-time All-Pro or anything like that, but he'll be reliable, dependable in every phase of the game, defensively and special teams. And then Cody Hollister is such a unique story. Obviously, he's got a twin brother there, but I went to a practice to evaluate a tight end, and all of a sudden I see this kid at wideout just mixing it up. He's making plays. He's pushing people around. He's playing hard. I asked the coach, I said, who's this kid over here? And he said, that's Cody Hollister. He's a transfer from Wyoming and doesn't have a scholarship. And I said, well, tell him he's got one now at Arkansas. And he committed to us a few days later. And just as a kid that has been here, was probably this year was a little bit set back. He had a foot injury. But up until that point, I had four wide receivers this year on NFL contracts, and he was one of them. And he played amongst a really good group, but his special teams was just outstanding. Bought into it, hustled, very, very athletic, very strong for his frame, and he can be, again, one of the better football IQs on the team. So, and Jacob, his brother, came in and trained with us here, and those two guys together, I could never tell them apart when they're standing there, but they both are very, very special young men. They have incredible faith in their religion and their belief, and the more I'm around kids like that, they just tend to have a little bit more success than others.
And right, and so Jacob is Cody's twin, for people listening, and was a tight end at Wyoming, and so is an interesting guy as, you know, maybe fighting for a role as, you know, the third or fourth tight end on the roster, which could be a pretty important spot as the Patriots head into training camp. And, Coach, as we're talking here, I remember, I believe it was the summer of 2014, so it was going into that year where they won the Super Bowl. You and your staff, I believe, had a chance to come up to Foxborough and hang out with the coaching staff here and kind of see how things were done. Do I have the timing right on that? And how beneficial was that to you to be able to spend some time in Foxborough with those guys?
Well, we as a staff, I've always tried to take my coordinators and a couple other personnel, EK Franks, my director of recruiting, my video guy. We go as professional development, and Coach was fortunate enough to open up his doors and let a lot of people in there. As a matter of fact, he asked me not to repeat that they were there. So we have enjoyed a good relationship before that, but we commonly share the same agent. Neil Cornish is also my agent, so we share a lot of similar thoughts, but it's just that organization, the way that the people interact, the way they're coached, to see a practice firsthand is pretty impressive in the way they go about things. So it's a lot of things that we've tried to model since that point, coming into where we are, emphasis on certain things. And again, he's one of the best in the business, if not the best. And to watch the inside dynamics from A to Z is a really, really special thing. But then also to see how he keeps adding players from different arenas and different thoughts and different areas. He's never afraid to go with what he believes is correct. And I know that's why they have success.
Well, and Brett, he obviously likes whatever it is you're doing wherever you are. So it seems to be a relationship that's worked out great. And it's obviously produced some really productive guys for this Patriots team. And guys who, as you said, you know, I think the way you put it was, you're not going to have to be worried about what they do at night. But when you talk about guys like James White and Trey Flowers, you know, two of, I would say, the most respected guys in that locker room, really. And even though they're both relatively young, when you talk to their veteran teammates about those guys, you get nothing but good feedback in return. And it sounds like they were the same way in college.
Yeah, it was funny. I was actually messaging James White this morning. I shot him a text last week about his new contract, giving a little bit of grief. And I had called his dad the day after the Super Bowl just because I remember being in that home. And his daddy's a police officer down in Miami. And mom and dad are just great, great people. And I remember building a great relationship with them. And I called dad after that Super Bowl and come out, you know, just congratulated him. And he had obviously just come back from his travels. And I shot James that message and I said, "Hey, you know, you're going to be a popular commodity. Are you going to get, you know, married yet?" And he said, "No, but I am engaged," with a smiley face. So and Trey's actually coming here in 2 weeks. I'm doing a trench hog camp, which is we could actually bring in NFL players. So Trey is one of my premier. We actually have a defensive lineman with New York, Robert Thomas, who's going to join us, and then I have Sebastian Tritola and Travis Swanson, two offensive linemen for Tennessee and the Detroit Lions, and we're going to put on a high school camp. They're the featured coach and guest, and Trey, you know, he got a million things he can do rather than come work one day in camp with me, but it just shows the respect and the loyalty that he has back to things here at Arkansas, and it's not surprising knowing the kids who they are.
Well, Coach, thanks so much for taking some time and talking to us.
Absolutely.
I know it's busy recruiting season for a lot of people, but we really do appreciate hearing from you and hearing about some of those guys that have made their way to New England, and that I'm sure we'll be learning a lot more about as the weeks and months move on here. But thanks so much again, and good luck this upcoming season.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Woo-pick.
Okay, so thanks again to Brett there. Had a lot of fun talking to him again. Just braving all kinds of weird weather down in Arkansas.
Though, like,
got through it okay. Had
been,
a good time
with
us.
Would have read about it by now.
Here's another thing when it comes to Arkansas, Tom, that's interesting. And didn't get into it at all with Bielema. But as I dug deeper into the Arkansas program, found that Brett Bielema's defensive coordinator for 2014, 2015, and 2016 was a guy by the name of Rob Smith, who's now the defensive coordinator at the University of Minnesota. Why would I be telling you about Rob Smith? Well, if you look at Rob Smith's bio, Tom, he was coaching at the University of Maine, was doing some recruiting in the New Jersey area, where he was introduced to a guy by the name of Craig Schiano.
What?
Works his way up the Rutgers ladder under Schiano, becomes defensive coordinator there, coaches the DBs, coaches special teams, coaches Steve Belichick, coaches Devin McCourty, Daron Harmon, Logan Ryan, the whole crew. And then he signs on with Arkansas 2016. 2014, 2015, 2016, and coaches a lot of these guys that have now made their way to New England. So the Arkansas connection, really not a new one. It is in one way a Ferentz connection. It is in another way a Schiano connection. And you know that these guys on both sides of the football, offensively and defensively, are taught in such a way that Belichick knows when they get to New England, they have a certain foundation already in place that will help them pick things up here in Foxborough.
When you look at the different connections that Belichick has had, where he'll plumb the same organizations or programs over and over, whether it's Pat Hill in Fresno for Ryan Wendell and Logan Mankins, whether it's obviously Florida and Urban Meyer, or the Rutgers one. He also, Kirk Ferentz with Iowa, but there are ones that he'll circle back to, whereas there are some places he'll just never go. You know, you don't see a lot of Pac-10 players. I might be speaking out of turn here.
Pat Chung is one that comes to mind.
Pat Chung comes
to
mind.
Yeah, every once in a while. Devin Lucien was a late-round pick. Connor McDermott this year.
Matt Slater comes to mind.
Yep. But not not the glut that you see from
Rob Gronkowski.
Yep. Yep, but it's interesting
it's
when you look. It's occasional, but their Notre Dame additions are very low. And I remember talking to Belichick a long time ago, probably 15 or so years ago. He had a feeling that, from what he had gathered prior to Charlie Weiss going there, they had a difficult time deciding whether they were hurt or injured at Notre Dame. Everybody was kind of hurt, not injured, in his experience. They had a few guys from Notre Dame there, but it's funny how a different program will get a different reputation. So over the course of time,
Florida State
was the one I was trying
connection.
To get
yeah.
to.
Yeah,
and Skarnecki ahead.
He's got friends
I'm
in
still
the program.
Surprised. It's surprising to me that Trey Jackson's no longer a Patriot that quickly, huh?
I wonder how long that connection will continue to be a connection. I'm sure it has to do with Skarnecki, appreciating the fundamentals that those offensive linemen are taught. But, Stork, and I guess Stork, it wasn't really neither of those guys, Stork or Jackson, it wasn't like their play. It wasn't like they played themselves out of the league.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's NC State
hurt.
Now, too.
They were just hurt. NC State, sure. Joe Tooney and Jacoby Brissett. Sorry, just kidding. It's not Brissett. It's Brissett.
There you have it, folks. Your connections.
Tom, you want to hit on any little news nuggets?
Patriots
that
Hall
have
of Fame.
Come
sure.
To pass
Patriots
here?
Hall of Fame. Raymond Claiborne gets the nod from Patriots fans as the guy that they want inducted in 2017. We'll celebrate that in August. He'll get his red coat and a lot of smiles will be bestowed upon him. God bless him. He was up against Vrabel and Seymour. I was in the meeting. It was interesting because initially the Veterans Committee was choosing between Claiborne and...
Was it Leon Gray?
Leon Gray. One of them needed 80% of the vote to push on through. Neither of them got that. We began speaking about the new crop of candidates and the existing crop, Seymour being in his first year of eligibility, I believe. Vrabel in his second, Matt Leitz there, Harrison there, Randy Moss in his first year of eligibility. And someone said, well, let's put Claiborne up again for consideration among the general guys, not just the veteran guys. So
veteran guys have to be retired for 25 years, I believe before they can be considered.
Yeah. So then after a conversation, we in the room rank 1, 2, 3, our nominees. I said Vrabel, Light, Seymour on mine, mm-hmm. but clearly there was enough for Claiborne in terms of points to get him on the ballot, and the fans thought enough of him, a great from the 70s and 80s, to put him on. So you can't, there's no wrong answer when you get to that. It's whoever the fans want. I think there's some genius in the way the Patriots do it. And after Kevin Falk getting in last year, there was a concern expressed in the room that, well, people don't know anymore what Raymond Claiborne was like. The fans...
I certainly
can't
don't.
Be trusted to appreciate it. And I look at Claiborne, and along with Mike Haynes, he was one of the better cornerbacks in football. The reason I like Vrabel and Light, I watched Claiborne as a kid play and, as a teenager. The reason I like Vrabel and Light is they won multiple Super Bowls. Not only did they win multiple Super Bowls and go to Pro Bowls, they also were part of a period of time in which the team was excellent. This isn't to say that Claiborne wasn't among the best at his position as those guys were. He might have even been higher given his Pro Bowl selections. than those guys were regarded at their positions. But as Patriots, I like those guys, but still, I think it's good commemoration.
Definitely, definitely. He is the franchise leader in interceptions, tied with Ty Law at 36. And like you said, three-time Pro Bowler, apparently a very accomplished kick returner as well.
Yeah.
So good for Raymond Claiborne. I know it bothered him for a while that he was not inducted, and I'm sure if I was him and I was looking at these guys that were up for nomination every year, and every year there are more guys from this Belichick era who are becoming eligible, I would say, geez, I got no shot. Right? He probably felt like that at some point. So it was, you know, this was his fourth year on the ballot, and that's all he needed. Like you said, he couldn't get in on the Veterans Committee vote. You need 8 out of 10 mm-hmm. votes to lock that down. So good for him. I like it now, Tom, because now for every year going forward, for who knows how long, we're going to be debating essentially the list that you put together a couple summers ago and who are right. the best Patriots of the Belichick era. Is Matt Light more important to this franchise than Richard Seymour or Mike Vrabel? What about Rodney Harrison? Where does he fit in? You know, Vince Wilfork, I guess Vince Wilfork hasn't even retired yet technically, but mm-hmm. whenever he does, you know, does he get in right away first year?
Wes Welker, Julian Edelman. I mean, those yep. those are going to be
great questions.
Fascinating questions. Bill Parcells still hanging out there mm-hmm. as well as a guy who many people think is highly deserving of being in over some other people. And, you know, you get into the whole chicken or the egg conversation there. It's funny, too, because when you think about this, the Patriots Hall of Fame would not be nearly as important had Bill Belichick never been here. I mean, had Bill Belichick never been here, people wouldn't be paying attention so much to the Patriots Hall of Fame.
No.
Or would there quite likely even be a facility there that was the Hall of Fame? It would just be a concept in the minds of some people. So that's...
And now you get the thing banged out for, you know, thousands of people that are showing up to these induction
and
ceremonies.
And we're live up on the scaffolding.
Unbelievable.
Live programming.
Exactly, exactly. I believe Mike Giardi did about an hour on his own or something up there for a little while.
I was up there for the
year.
Willie. I did the Willie.
You were up there,
yeah. I was
yeah.
up there with him.
No, you're up there. Don't take offense. Jeez, I mean, you're right there.
I mean, I'm in the melee, too. I'm in the fray.
He was out there hanging by himself for quite a while.
It's because he'll make you think that he was.
You know
I mean,
why?
I know why.
You were on stage.
I was on stage, but Mike will make you think that he was because that's...
Partying with the boys.
If he was there for an hour, he'll make you think he was there for three. There for 15 minutes, he'll make you think he was there for 45.
He did a great job.
There with two people, he'll make you think he was there with negative nobody.
I don't know why you have to do this.
I don't know why you have to do this. It was a negative 15 degree day in the middle of August. I had no gloves.
Negative 15 degrees.
No, he had the tan working at that point. There was nothing that was going to happen to him that day that was going to bother him at all physically because of Mother Nature. Tan was strong at that point. You don't have to worry about a sunburn. The guy's got the tightly cropped, thick head of hair. Wind doesn't bother
Salt
him.
Pepper.
The way it bothers
he looks more and more like George Clooney all the time, doesn't he?
Doesn't he? Doesn't he?
I mentioned Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
He turns 31 this week. Monday, he turned 31.
Yes.
And on Quick Slants, the program, the television show, mm-hmm. you'll see a conversation Scott Zolak and I have about him in terms of, is he better than his predecessor? Wes Welker.
Great question. What was your take on that? Give us a little preview to the show.
2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 7 years of Welker. And then Edelman has been here since 2009, but his glory seasons
6 years of Welker
have been 13, 14, 15, and 16. So Edelman's been since 2013 really the most stable and consistent part of the Patriots offense. You could even make the argument that he's more important to the offense than Rob Gronkowski. He's been on the field for both Super Bowl wins.
Made huge plays in both.
Look, Welker was great. Edelman's harder to defend. Edelman's harder to stop. Edelman's harder to take away. Edelman was just as good, and I'm really couching that, probably a better punt returner.
Definitely a better punt than Jarvis.
God, Welker was good though.
Welker was really good. Edelman has the big play potential as a punt returner that Welker really didn't have because Edelman's faster.
But Welker was nasty.
Welker, I think, is quicker. I think short area quickness. You talk about some of those option routes. Like, who was better than Wes Welker? I think we've, you know, it's hard for me to say that Edelman was better in that phase. When you say he's harder to cover, I don't know. Welker was always open, it felt like. And when you needed him, third downs.
Welker played with Randy Moss. And I know I'm
it's
not
a shame he didn't catch
here.
That ball in Indianapolis because people here kill him and continue to kill him. But this guy was like the ultimate Patriot for half a dozen
I
years
loved
here.
Him. I loved him. He was a great player. And saying that Julian Edelman might be better than him shouldn't be a damning
no.
label.
Nope.
But it's a very interesting conversation because whereas Welker ended up signing a deal in 2000 and whatever it was, and then being franchised in 2012 and making like $9 million, even now, Edelman never really got the same financial boon that Welker did. He's never been to a Pro Bowl. He may never go to a Pro Bowl. But I would say that he is a better player than Welker was. And I could even say maybe, not definitely, but he's hunting around Troy Brown territory.
I agree with you on the Troy Brown territory.
I
think both those guys were the offense was different, right? So you just had more opportunities to go around. Troy Brown, hard to match the number of clutch plays that he had, but I think Edelman's right there with him. In terms of playoff, big time, I mean, double pass, the crazy catch, the miracle catch in the Super Bowl, the jerk route in the end zone where he should have had a touchdown and Brady overthrew him and they go back to the play and he catches the touchdown against the Seahawks. I mean,
sometimes
so
I'll run
many,
the jerk route.
So many big
I'll go
plays.
The jerk route.
Sure will. But Tom, I know we're not going to make this a statistical argument because both of us have watched these guys when you talk about Edelman and Welker and watched them closely for a long time. And it's okay for us to have the opinions that we have aside from the statistics. Julian Edelman's best statistical season, I guess you could match 2013 up with the one he just had. 2013, he had 105 catches, only time he's broken 100 catches for just over 1,000 yards. 2016, he had almost 100. He had 98 catches for 1,100 yards. Wes Welker, Tom, broke 100 catches 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Broke 1,100 yards 5 times. He broke 1,500 yards once. He broke 1,300 yards in 2009. This guy was arguably the most productive receiver in the league for 6 years. Megatron, who else? Larry Fitzgerald, stack his numbers up against anybody else's, and they are right there.
It's amazing.
Different kind of player, obviously, but just incredibly, incredibly productive at a time when the offense... Would you say the offense is more variable now, or was it...
Now, much more variable.
Even
now.
Though he was... Welker was, you know, height of Gronkowski, Hernandez. You know, he was right there and was productive during that year or two.
But the running game at that point was Danny Woodhead and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis and Lawrence Maroney and Sammy Morris and Fred Taylor and God. Now it's really diverse.
God had a good year that year.
And God. Jesus, we can't take this guy down. He's crucifying us.
It's a great argument. I think if you just look at the body, you know, the body of work.
Body of work.
In the regular season, it has to be Welker. But you factor everything in, even though it's a little bit smaller sample from Edelman, you factor in the playoffs and the big plays. I think Edelman has surpassed Welker at this point, but it is close, in my opinion. It's close.
Our opinion remains. So you say Welker.
No, I say Edelman. I think you factor everything in.
Well,
Edelman,
it's funny because you were talking and I was... And you said exactly what you thought, and I didn't hear it because I was still focused on body of work, because that's how our priest used to say, the body of Christ, the body of Christ.
Who was that?
Father Doucette, growing up St. Thecla's in Pembroke. Body of Christ, the body of Christ. Body of Christ, the body of Christ.
Sounds like you put a lot into it.
Snake and I would sit back there in our little pew. which we always thought that word was exceptionally funny.
Very funny word.
And we would just lip sync to Body of Christ. The Body of Christ.
Was he on the mic? Was he doing communion on the mic?
No, he was loud.
Wow.
He was loud.
Good for Father Doucette.
Yep. Deuce! No, we never called him that. Deuce.
The deuce is loose.
Ooh, Catholic fun.
So we got Edelman, we got Welker, we've got Hall of Fame.
Brett Bielema, Hall of Fame.
We got Brett Bielema.
Let's shut this motherfucker down.
Yeah, I think we're good. I think we're good here.
Can you bleep that out at the end?
No, I can do that. We did drop, I think, 2 F-bombs.
Yeah, in your
last
honor.
Last week in memory of you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, we said, listen, we want to make it like you're here with us. And so there are a couple opportunities.
You know who's also here with us?
To work a little.
The Body of Christ. The Body of Christ. See you next week, folks.
LeBron James.
LeBron James. Michael Jordan.
This is the end of the podcast. If you liked it or didn't like it all that much, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, where you can subscribe to Quick Slants the Podcast, the Expats Podcast, the Celtics Talk Podcast, the Baseball Show Podcast, the Best of Boston Sports Tonight Podcast, and really, any other podcast you like. CSN Podcasts are also on apps like Stitcher, Spotify, and Audioboom, where you can subscribe.
The Arkansas Razorbacks head coach Brett Bielema. Why would he do that? Because there's a lot of three.
I'm kind of having a bad thunderstorm here. I just want to make sure I'm getting clear to you.
Oh, no, yeah, you sound great. You sound great. That's okay. Hopefully that thing passes. Has it been bad all day?
Well, it's bad, and I think someone just is a tornado warning. They got hail coming. So.
Oh, man. You know what? That would make for a great podcast if we had you fighting through a tornado to talk Patriots with us.
Exactly.